Radiation levels are rising in Japan.
And stocks are dropping around the world.
Marketplace Midday Update is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM, American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis. Thanks for joining us for the podcast from Marketplace.org. It's Tuesday, March 15th.
Coming up, we'll get the latest on the unfolding nuclear disaster in Japan and the economic consequences around the world. Also, gas prices are still rising. We'll hear about the politics at the pump.
And that's all just ahead here on the Marketplace Midday Update.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Squarespace.com, an easy way to publish a high-quality website or blog. For a free trial, go to squarespace.com/marketplace.
International nuclear energy monitors say the level of radiation at Japan's troubled Fukushima Daiichi power plant has dropped this morning, but worries continue in earthquake-devastated Japan. There are reports of food, water, and emergency supply shortages, and fears about radiation haven't gone away, especially today after people learned of a third explosion at the plant.
In Tokyo, a couple hundred miles away, residents are taking the threat of radiation being carried by the wind very, very seriously. Of course, Tokyo, one of the largest cities in the world. Marketplace's Rob Schmitz is in Japan. Hey, Rob.
Hey, Steve.
So you were in Tokyo earlier today. How are people handling the news?
Well, I mean, first off, people here are glued to their televisions after what happened today. I mean, they want to know whether they're safe or not. I happened to be at Tokyo Station while Japan's chief cabinet secretary spoke live to the country about what was happening. And the crowd of people watching this was Tim Knowles, a British expat who's lived in Tokyo for 30 years. He and his family were joined by a lot of others who were essentially fleeing the city due to a fear of radiation exposure. Here's what he said.
Well, I mean, the thing is, it's a stress. I'm fed up with worrying. So I just want to go so I don't really have to worry.
But is there a real threat to Tokyo, Rob?
It's not clear yet. I mean, what is clear is that a fair amount of radiation is leaking 135 miles north of Tokyo. Earlier today, it appeared the wind would blow the radiation in Tokyo's direction. But that's not clear now. We do know that radiation levels 22 times what is normal have already been recorded in Tokyo, but this level is still low and won't necessarily harm human health. The government certainly has been asking people to stay calm, but what's also clear is that in addition to this reactor, there are two other reactors that are at risk of leaking more radiation. And for many here, that's a scenario they don't want to stick around for.
All right, Marketplace's Asia Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz. Rob, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
Now let's get to the domestic picture from Julie Neiman, analyst with Smith Moore & Company. She's with us from St. Louis. Good morning, Julie.
Morning.
So you just heard Rob's report from Japan. What about here in the U.S.? What are the economic effects of this disaster so far?
Well, it's a four-letter word, risk, and that's the key thing that everybody's running from right now. The market moved past rioting, revolution, and recession, but now there's fear that Japan's situation will pull us all back into recession again. And, of course, leading the market lower is General Electric. Big risk there, everybody feels, because they had six reactors, all manufactured by GE, but there is no liability there. But the future of the nuclear industry and the demand for reactors is likely to drop off here after 30 years of attempting to work off Three Mile Island. So a big risk to the nuclear industry.
But Julie, we heard last year after the BP oil spill that that was going to be a game changer for the oil industry and deep water drilling, and it doesn't appear that that was the case. So do you really think that the nuclear industry is at risk here?
Well, the big kicker here is there is no substitute for oil. Basically, the rest of the world runs on it. It's in manufacturing. It's in virtually every energy generation. There is a substitute for nuclear. And we've had a 30-year delay, and in all likelihood, we're going to see more delay here. Will it kill the nuclear industry? No, but it's certainly going to delay it again. There is no substitute for oil, and that will continue to have big demand.
Julie Neiman, analyst at Smith Moore & Company, thanks as always for your time.
You bet.
Well, in Europe today, government officials and industry experts are meeting to talk about the safety of nuclear power. But Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports some countries are still going ahead with their nuclear plans.
China and India have expressed firm support for nuclear technology, but no country has backed nuclear power with as much enthusiasm as France. And France has defended its own safety record. All French nuclear power plants, it says, are built with the risk of flooding and seismic activity in mind. But the French government could do little else. France derives 75% of its electricity from nuclear power. And France is one of the world's biggest suppliers of nuclear technology. The largely state-owned Areva company sells reactors and fuel around the world. Alex Barnett of Jefferies International says the Japanese disaster is a major setback.
I think the company will be extremely impacted by what's happened. I think there will obviously be a lot less new build globally of nuclear as sort of the fallout from this issue.
Areva is currently trying to sell as many as 10 nuclear power plants to Britain. That deal could now be in jeopardy. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
The nuclear crisis in Japan has people as far away as here in the U.S. taking precautionary measures to stay safe, which means the medicine used to treat radiation poisoning is now mostly sold out here at home. Marketplace's Mitchell Hartman reports.
It's not surprising that some Americans are scrambling to protect themselves from nuclear contamination after news reports like this.
Japan's nuclear crisis is worsening and is now threatening public health.
Since yesterday, there's been a run on potassium iodide tablets from online suppliers in the U.S., and some have run out. Potassium iodide can help protect the body against radioactive iodine-131, one of the contaminants most likely to spread on wind blowing away from the damaged reactors.
Working against the United States is the fact that the westerly winds do tend to be the most prevalent.
Dr. Ira Helfand is a board member of Physicians for Social Responsibility.
And material that is released may, to a significant degree, blow eastward towards the United States. There obviously is a great distance between Japan and the west coast of the United States, but we did see at Chernobyl that when large amounts of radiation are released, they can spread over a very large area.
There hasn't been a large radiation release so far, and none has reached the U.S. Helfand says potassium iodide should only be used under a doctor's supervision. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Squarespace.com, an easy way to create and manage a high-quality website or blog. Visit squarespace.com/marketplace and sign up for a free trial. Then choose a design and color scheme that's uniquely you. That's squarespace.com/marketplace. We thank Squarespace for their support.
You're listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, the 15th day of March. I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson. Treasury Secretary Tim Geithner testifies today before the Senate Banking Committee about a tricky problem: what to do about the government's role in the mortgage market. As Marketplace's Nancy Marshall Genzer reports now from Washington, lawmakers are putting the finishing touches on new compromise legislation to deal with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac.
A year ago, Republicans were introducing legislation to abolish Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac. Mark Williams teaches finance at Boston University. He says it was an all-or-nothing approach.
The term was put a bullet in Fannie and Freddie and walk away. But I think there's a greater understanding that you can't just do that.
You can't do that because Fannie and Freddie guarantee or own about half of all U.S. mortgages. So now Republicans are taking a step-by-step approach, gradually raise the fees Fannie and Freddie charge to guarantee loans, move them away from the goal of making housing affordable for everyone. Kenneth Posner is a financial analyst at North American Financial Holdings.
It's almost like the methadone treatment for the heroin addict. And to some extent, the U.S. housing market has been hooked on government support.
Some of the Republican measures dovetail with the Obama administration's proposals for Fannie and Freddie. Posner is hopeful Congress will pass legislation this year before the lessons of the housing crisis are forgotten. In Washington, I'm Nancy Marshall Genzer for Marketplace.
Well, the price of oil may be falling as a result of the events in Japan, but gas prices are hitting new highs. Hawaii has become the first state with a gas price average of more than $4 a gallon. It's about $3.53 nationwide in the contiguous 48. Marketplace's Elisa Roth reports on the politics of pump prices.
The Obama administration has been pushing all kinds of climate change legislation. It was already unclear which way some Democrats in the Senate would go. And now there's concern that high gas prices will push them to vote against the administration's proposals. Daniel Weiss directs climate strategy at the Center for American Progress. And he says it doesn't matter that politicians don't cause high gas prices.
As gasoline prices rise, so does voters' angst. As voter angst rise, politicians become much more cautious.
That's especially true in an election year. Frank O'Donnell is president of Clean Air Watch, and he says the many Democratic senators who are up for re-election next year are acutely aware of that. And Republicans are taking advantage of their anxiety by blaming Democrats for the high gas prices.
The question is, will that kind of demagoguery get them to try to undermine the EPA's attempts to do something about greenhouse gas emissions?
And other climate issues. I'm Elisa Roth for Marketplace.
Microsoft is pulling the plug on its Zune music player. You have a Zune, don't you?
I do
Jared?
Not have you a Zune. I have an iPhone.
Oh, you do. You have an iPhone, as I do. And the computer giant's MP3, this is the Zune, was the answer to the iPod. Bloomberg reports Microsoft isn't going to be releasing any more models, but they're supposedly going to be taking the software, the Zune software, and putting it in their Windows 7
phones, right?
As one blogger put it, when you're very late to the party, not too many people notice your arrival. You are listening to the Midday Update for Tuesday, March 15th. Hello, I'm Steve Chiotakis.
And I'm Jeremy Hobson on Twitter, at Jeremy Hobson.
And I am on Twitter as well, at Radio Chio. You can also give us your feedback by going to marketplace.org and clicking on the link that says Contact.
Well, in the horrifying videos and images of the tsunami that hit Japan, there's one thing you can't see, but damage to it would affect us right here in the U.S. I'm talking about the long phone and internet cables that run under the Pacific Ocean. Marketplace's Eve Tro reports on how telecom connections are faring.
You may think of your cell phone or your internet service as wireless, but it's really not, says Eric Bender. He runs Wilcon, a hub in downtown Los Angeles, where millions of phone calls, videos, and other digital data packets make one last stop before they get to customers. If they come from overseas, he says, there's lots of wire involved.
This is a map of the submarine cables of the world.
2011 edition.
Yes, this is the new one. I just got this in
Thousands of miles of whisper-thin fiber optics are wrapped tight in plastic and metal and laid under the ocean floor. They can be as slim as your finger or a few inches thick. They run between beaches in Japan and California.
And they come in from under the sea, under the sand, and then on shore there's a building. You wouldn't even know, just a block building, and then they're run throughout the U.S.
In Asia, Japan is the telecom point of entry. Six cables connect it to the U.S. At least two of those were damaged last week, and more lines within Asia got hurt. Each new underseas connection costs up to $1 billion, so the telecom giants pool their money to buy them. And, says Eric Bender, pitch in when things go wrong.
In times like this, all the carriers internationally tend to work very closely together because it may not be them this time, but the next one could affect them.
Companies like his help reroute data when disaster strikes. Tim Strong at Telegeography Research says Google, Verizon, and other big companies are ready when cables snap.
These kind of breaks happen all the time.
Ship anchors, fishing nets, or just the ocean floor shifting cause undersea cables to break up to 100 times a year. Companies can detect the breaks virtually when their data bounce back, but they can't fix things from afar.
For that, you need old-fashioned ships to go out with people to splice the cable again.
And he says crews are headed to do that off the coast of Japan right now. Think of them next time you're reading online news about the quake. In Los Angeles, I'm Eve Tro for Marketplace.
Well, this week, the Mexican government is expected to start compensating workers for money taken from them nearly a half century ago. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler now, and how a U.S. guest worker program stiffed a bunch of Mexican laborers.
About a dozen elderly men have gathered in this Los Angeles office for an update. They're fighting to get money taken from them by the Mexican government. Between 1942 and 1964, millions of migrants came to the U.S. to work legally under the so-called Bracero program. The Mexican government collected 10% of their wages.
They told us that our salary would be reserved for our savings.
That 73-year-old Jose Almaraz, he earned 50 cents an hour to pick cotton in Texas in 1958 and 59.
They treated us like, well, I hate to make the comparison, but like animals. They put us in a big corral. They collectively washed, disinfected, and fumigated us.
When he got back to Mexico, he couldn't find any way to retrieve the money owed to him by the government. He's been working with activist Juan José Gutierrez, who directs Vamos Unidos USA, an immigration services company. Gutierrez says the Bracero program funneled all the garnished wages to Mexico's Secretary of Agriculture.
And then after that, nobody knows what happened to the money. The money was never provided to the rightful owners. The money disappeared. Some would say it got stolen.
Over the subsequent five decades, many ex-braceros have died. 65-year-old Moises Varajas came on behalf of his deceased father, who worked in the bracero program for about 8 years.
It's about getting financial compensation. Also, it's about getting justice for all the ex-braceros.
The Mexican government is expected to pay each bracero a little less than $4,000. Jose Almaraz has been waiting for more than 50 years. He lives on a small pension and says the money would be more than symbolic.
No. I need that money.
This month, about 40,000 laborers expect to finally get their checks. But even after that, Gutierrez says there are still another 100,000 former braceros waiting to be paid. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
And finally, Steve, on a day like today, some levity. Okay.
Please.
How would you feel if I told you I was going to give you $1 million?
Well, I would be like, please, just stand. And I don't even care how you give it to me or in what way. Wet, dry, whatever.
It would make you happy.
It would make me happy.
That would make you happy. Yeah. Well, you might not be as happy as you think. According to a new survey from Fidelity Investments, 42% of American millionaires say they don't feel rich.
American millionaires are saying this.
That's right. That's
they
right.
Feel
they don't
rich.
Feel rich.
How
they,
do you feel
they,
rich?
Well, I have the answer
for
you.
Do you need chenille or maybe, you know, some sort of fur?
You might, but the millionaires say that the way to feel rich is to have at least $7.5 million. You can't just do it with $1 million or even $5 million. It has to be $7.5 million.
So somebody's contemplating, I don't feel rich, but if I had $7.5 million in the bank,
then
I would feel rich.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. Well, this is a goal then. Hopefully we both can attain.
Yeah, not in this profession. In Los Angeles, I'm Jeremy Hobson.
And I'm Steve Chiatakis, still poor to this day. This is the Marketplace Midday Update.
And this is APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.